On a typical workday in the early months of 2017, Keith Stellman parks his car. He's at work, like always. Except today isn't typical. There's something going on at work that everybody knows about, but no one's talking about. Today's the day that everything comes out into the open.
To be honest, I'm torn.
So Keith gets out of his car, and he brings this concoction with him. And it all comes down to this. How accurate was his prediction? Keith Stellman is the meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service office in Atlanta, Georgia. And today is the annual chili cook-off. From Bardic, you're listening to Who We Are. I'm Carissa Weiser. Whether it's the result of a friendly office cooking competition or the more serious parts of his job, Keith Stellman is part of something big. He's part of this national, even international group that's trying to predict the future.
Weather affects us all every single day. It just affects us differently depending on where you live.
Here's something that a lot of us take for granted. The weather. It's what we talk about with strangers to make light conversation. It's why we keep spare umbrellas in the car, which I can never seem to find when I actually need it. But for people like Keith, there's real value in trying to understand weather patterns. Yes, those patterns help create forecasts of what we think will happen outside on a specific timeline. But there's a third step, and this is what matters most. It's being informed and prepared for what does actually happen.
Everybody needs to understand what their risks are wherever they go. You grew up as a kid in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and your parents go to Panama City Beach for a beach vacation. You don't understand or know what the risks are at the beach per se. You didn't know that rip tides, you can actually drown from rip currents. But knowing where to find information about how strong rip currents are going to be on any given day, and vice versa. If you're growing up in California, you're not really exposed to tornadoes. But if you go to Oklahoma or Tennessee or Mississippi, tornadoes are a new thing. So you need to know what do I need to do to prepare myself to deal with this particular threat or hazard that is common in this particular region.
Where does one get that kind of passion for outdoor conditions and safety in relation to weather trends by region? I asked Keith, and he took me back to the 80s.
May 31st, 1985. I was 12 years old, and there was a major tornado outbreak. I had never really experienced tornadoes till that year.
We're in northwest Pennsylvania, off Lake Erie, in what's known as the Snowbelt region. And there's about to be a big tornado.
It is in one of the Storm Prediction Center's top tornado outbreaks in U.S. history. But it went through my town. And I remember I was at home. I was out on the back porch playing in the backyard with my brother and my neighbor. And the sky just got really, really dark and it turned green.
That's when leaves and other debris start falling from the sky.
We live sort of on the bottom of a hillside. But you couldn't see over the hill, but it was coming from that direction. And then it started to hail, so we took cover underneath my patio roof. Mom came out and grabbed both of us, and we had a half basement, and just threw my brother and I and our friend into the basement on the couch.
Just a few moments ago, Keith, his brother, and their friend were playing baseball in the backyard. And now they're riding out a tornado on the couch in the basement?
Next thing we know, we come out and well, that's when we hear the siren of the fire hall calling all of the volunteer firefighters in. That's how they called them all in back then.
But this time, it's not because of a fire.
Turns out it's because the tornado had tracked about a half mile from our house. And there were a lot of houses and there were kids and people trapped. And there were actually several people killed in the town that I lived in from that tornado that came through. But I very, very distinctly remember that event.
I kind of relate to that. You know, when you are a kid, you hear about these things, but then nothing ever really happens. So when it does, it's kind of, wow, okay, that's real.
Yeah, and it, you know, and just driving past those areas that got hit and seeing how it completely scoured an entire hillside for a half mile. And all of the trees were just cut down to the base or completely gone. To see cars that were picked up and thrown hundreds of yards. that really had an impact on me as a kid, because that's the first time I'd really seen or been exposed to anything like that.
If you're thinking, that's how Keith found his calling, there's more to the story. His interest in weather goes back even further to a childhood toy and the powers of the public broadcasting service known as PBS.
I was in first grade, and there used to be a TV show called AM Weather that was broadcast out of Penn State. Penn State had one of the biggest meteorology programs in the country and still does. And they had a TV show called AM Weather broadcast on PBS. And it was part of the student curriculum that they would do like their own TV broadcast of weather for the state of Pennsylvania.
Keith grew up watching AM Weather and also found an interest in geography. So much so that his parents gave him one of those U.S. map puzzles. You know, the kind where all the pieces are different states.
So I knew all of my states, all my capitals by first grade. And I would cut out with the blue construction paper, the red construction paper, cold fronts and warm fronts and lows and highs. And I would mimic them on that puzzle, what they did on TV when I was 6, 7 years old.
Wow. So this is the job for you.
Yes, it is. It is. I landed in the perfect job for me. Yes.
But even still, meteorology is not the direction that Keith took in the beginning. And I find this really interesting. I've talked with hundreds of people by now, and the majority of them, like Keith, had this childhood interest related to the career that they ultimately have today. But it's not the career that they first considered or even pursued, myself included. But I'll save that for another day.
I graduated high school and went into civil engineering. It's like any college kid. I had odd jobs. I was on a baseball scholarship too, so I played baseball in college. I worked part-time at a video rental store, and I cut grass. Any jobs that I could work weird hours that would allow me to do all of the other things I was doing.
It's that time between sophomore and junior year, and Keith starts to realize he's not doing so hot in civil engineering.
I really didn't like the civil engineering, but I was really good in math and science. And that summer, I got a job with a landscape company. And that was some of the hardest labor I have ever done in my entire life. And I worked with a bunch of guys, and I saw how hard they worked. And I said, you know, I have an opportunity in front of me to do something different. I don't want to do this kind of job, because if I'm going down this path, I may end up doing a job like this. So that's when I sought out a different path, and I came across the only school in the state of Louisiana at the time that offered a meteorology program, and I actually transferred to that school. That summer, I gave up my baseball scholarship. I transferred to the other school. I talked to the coach. I got on the baseball team at that school and got into the meteorology program at that other school. And I finished my degree in meteorology at the other school with a 4.0 from that point forward. And that summer was a real turning point for me.
As you can imagine, this was a proud moment for Keith and actually his family. I asked Keith about his parents, and the Stellmans sound incredible.
So what are your parents like?
Well, they had me right out of high school. My dad worked at a machine shop, and my mom worked at a bank. Both just had high school degrees. My dad was unemployed for a time when I was a kid. We had a rough growing up. I remember eating government cheese and drinking powdered milk from the free milk that they'd give you for government. It was, you know, nasty, obviously. But when I was about 8, my dad went back to school and got his degree in geology, went on to get his master's degree in geophysics. And this was in Pennsylvania. And we moved to New Orleans because he got his first job with Shell Oil as a geophysicist, searching for oil pockets for Shell in the Gulf of Mexico.
Is he still working there?
He recently retired as a geophysicist. He'd done that for about 20, 25 years or so. My mom, when I was 14, went back to school and ended up coming out with a physical therapy degree, and she's been in physical therapy ever since. She's actually still working as a physical therapist.
I think that even in and of itself is a beautiful story. How proud of them are you?
I can't say enough about my parents and what they've done for me, what they've done for themselves. To go from a very poor rural Western PA town, to break away from that and move and leave your family and go to some place you've never been before, and then start all over and then follow your dreams. My dad really liked what he did, and my mom, her lifelong dream was to be a physical therapist. And so she went back to school when we were teenagers.
So when I say Keith works as a meteorologist in charge for the National Weather Service in Atlanta, Georgia, I'm talking about Keith, the first grader who watched AM weather and followed cold and warm fronts on his puzzle map, the 12-year-old who survived a massive tornado on his couch in the basement, the college student who had a wake-up call during a tough summer job and transferred to a new school, who became a meteorologist after watching his own parents change careers to follow their dreams. This is the Keith I'm talking about, and he has over 21 years of experience in his field.
You're going to have some good days and you're going to have some bad ones. You just hope that you have more good ones than bad ones. And for the most part, that's true with this position. It's because I love the weather so much. It makes the job much more interesting and more fun.
And what could be more fun than balloons?
In fact, worldwide, weather balloons are launched twice a day by all countries of the world. There's an organization called the World Meteorological Organization, and they have agreements in place that everyone around the world will launch a balloon at the same times every day. And the reason we do that is because in order to predict the future, you have to have a snapshot of exactly what's going on right now of the entire atmosphere. And the weather balloon is a large latex balloon. It feels like a latex glove, but we fill it up with hydrogen, and it gets to about 6 feet in diameter. So it's,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a pretty big balloon when we fill it up. And obviously the instrument and the parachute are tied to the balloon. So it's the balloon, then the parachute, then the instrument, and we let the balloon go.
If you're not familiar with weather balloons, as was the case for me, I mean, it does sound kind of rudimentary, but this is a serious balloon. And the way atmospheric pressure changes as you reach 20 miles in the air, the balloon goes from being 6 feet in diameter at the Earth's surface to the size of an 1,800 square foot house, way bigger than my first apartment, before it bursts, and the parachute brings the measurement tool back to Earth. It's actually kind of cool.
About every second, we get data all the way up to about 100 to 110,000 feet, about 20 miles up in the atmosphere.
Wow.
Basically at the edge of space. If you were to put a camera on it, you would be in that area right at the edge of space where it's like dark on the right-hand side, and you're sort of at the very thin part of the atmosphere.
And what kind of information are you collecting?
Temperature, dew point, pressure, and winds.
And teams around the world are working together to release these balloons all at the same time?
Yes. So that data is absolutely critical to forecasting not only what's going to happen today, but, you know, we talk about 7-day or 10-day forecasts. The computer models could not operate without that information because, like I said, in order to predict the future, the math and the equations that go into these computer models have to know what's going on right now. And so this is one of the only ways we can measure the entire atmosphere is through launching these weather balloons.
So we're using massive balloons and tools to collect data about the Earth's atmosphere at a given time. But what exactly happens to that data?
Our charge via taxpayer funding is for the safety and protection of the American people. We do that through all of the data collection, which feeds into all of the computer models that the TV meteorologists present to you, and also the radar data. All of the radars are owned and operated by the National Weather Service. And then, of course, probably our bread and butter, which is the watch and warning responsibility.
Ah, the watch versus warning. I lovingly debate this with my husband. What do each of those mean? Is it watch out, there's a tornado, and warning, there may be a tornado? Or is it watch for a potential tornado and warning, we have an actual tornado? See what I mean?
A watch means that conditions are favorable for severe weather to occur. It means, okay, the temperatures are right and the moisture is right and the lift in the atmosphere is right. But a warning means it's happening now. You need to take shelter now.
This is Jackie Jarris, a broadcast meteorologist currently in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, wow. Well, I've been a meteorologist for more than 20 years. I've been doing this a long time. I started in news while I was in college, actually. At the time, I went to Iowa State University, and they owned an ABC-affiliated television station. So I started working there right away behind the scenes, just helping out and learning whatever I could.
After school, Jackie went to Sioux City, Iowa for a job not in weather, but in news. At least, that's how it started.
I got into meteorology by a fluke. It was something that always fascinated me. I grew up in the Midwest, Minnesota and Wisconsin, and so I experienced all different types of weather there, from severe weather, thunderstorms and tornadoes, to blizzards. And so it was something that always fascinated me, but I actually really wanted to start out in news. So I graduated with a degree in journalism, and I started reporting and anchoring the news. And by a fluke, they needed somebody to do weather on the weekends for a while, and they said, "You're going to do it." And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he said, "Oh, yes, you are." So I gave it a try, and I really enjoyed what I did.
Why did they need you to fill in for the weather?
Our chief meteorologist, who went on vacation for a month, ended up dying in a car crash and didn't come back. So I ended up doing it for longer than planned, for about 3 months, until they found his replacement.
That replacement was not Jackie, but her time in weather sparked an interest that she couldn't deny.
I kind of missed doing it, and I was really fascinated with what I was learning. So I took a job doing half weather and half news to kind of see what I wanted to do. And finally, I decided I really love learning about the weather, and it just impacts everyone and it changes every day, and it was always different. So I went back to school to get my credentials, and here I am.
When you hear her voice, there's no denying that she belongs in broadcasting.
Hi, I'm Jackie Jarris, and I'm a broadcast meteorologist.
And I'm not the only one who thinks that.
And I worked for a couple of years in Evansville, Indiana. Went back to Des Moines, Iowa, and worked there at the NBC affiliate for a couple of years doing morning weather. And then I worked at CNN for over a decade and really enjoyed that experience. And I went to DC after that for 4 years. And here I am back in Atlanta. And it was just a personal decision to do it on a freelance basis for now, just because my kids are getting to that point where they're not going to be in my house forever. And I just wanted a little bit more flexibility to be able to work when I wanted to and not work when I don't.
Jackie is credentialed, which is something you really want to look for when you're taking someone's word about the weather. She's a certified broadcast meteorologist through the American Meteorological Society. She also has the seal of approval through the National Weather Association and the Mark Trail Award for promoting NOAA Weather Radio and awareness for keeping people safe during severe weather.
Okay, so you've been doing this for a while. You know what you're doing, obviously. But we've all heard the jokes about people and weather and accuracy. What's your take on that?
Oh, yes. I've heard it before. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me 100 times, you're a meteorologist, right? But if you look at it, we know more today than we did even 10 years ago. Technology has improved so much. What I try to do when I present weather information is be honest and tell you what I know. And accuracy rates, for the most part, are somewhere between 85 and 93% now in terms of being within 3 degrees of the forecast high and low and whether or not you're going to get the rain or snow.
So there's a lot of ways that technology is really changing your field.
Oh, absolutely. It's great because, you know, you get more data and more information. So, you know, we can look at models here in the United States. We can look at models from Europe as well as from Japan. And so we have a lot of different sources of information that we didn't used to have before, as well as remote sensing like satellites and radar. Weather balloons go up and we get samples of data at all kinds of different levels in the atmosphere now. So it's incredible.
What we see on TV weather segments is so much more complex than it appears. It's the broadcast meteorologist's job to transform technical and scientific knowledge into accessible information. And that's really where personality comes into play.
What you generally see a meteorologist in front of the green screen or in front of a map, all of that's really ad lib, which is why sometimes our grammar isn't perfect, or sometimes we'll say something wrong or have a little Freudian slip or something like that.
It's this wonderful reminder that behind the professional presentation that you see on the TV screen, you're still looking at a very real human being, like Keith, who helps supply data to broadcast meteorologists.
Wow, so you guys get all of the data, and it's almost like someone is putting a different user interface on it, making it really pretty.
Correct. Yeah, that, I guess that's probably the easy way to explain it is, yeah, the TV meteorologists, they take, you know, all of this data information that exists, or they get it from private companies who then go in and data mine it and make it available to them in that format so they can display it. Correct. That is a whole side business of its own.
The same Keith who looks at data in his own life to make other big decisions, like which chili to bring to this year's annual chili cook-off.
Do you guys do office parties?
Yes, we do. In fact, what is today, 15th? We actually have a office chili cook-off in 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness, are you doing a chili?
Yes, I am.
Have you done this before? Have you won it?
I got second. Well, I've won it in my neighborhood. I haven't won the office one yet, so that's the challenge.
I don't know if you can share what chili you're doing, but do you know what chili you're doing?
I'm torn because I do a white chicken chili, and then I do a traditional chili. Now, to be fair, this past fall, I won the neighborhood chili cook-off for the most traditional chili.
Oh, wow.
So I may take that winning recipe and bring it here to see if I can win.
That is a toss-up because my white bean chicken chili has won every single time I've taken it. Uh-huh. But you can't argue with traditional chili.
No, I know. It's like, yeah, it goes back to your roots, right?
Yeah. Can you only bring one?
Can only bring one, yes. Only enter one.
Man.
So it's funny, we did the chili cook-off 2 years ago, and Jim Cantore, who works at the Weather Channel, is a good friend of mine, mm-hmm. and I invited him down for to be a guest for celebrity judge of the chili cook-off.
I love it.
That was because they're right here in Atlanta as well.
Yeah.
So that's an advantage for us as we get to know some of the TV personalities, both at the local level and the national level, and that includes the Weather Channel.
Oh, okay.
So we're fortunate to have them right here in our backyard. But so I've gotten to know quite a few of them over the years, and he and I are pretty good friends. But he came down and judged it for us.
Nice.
He loved it. He did it on his off day because he said, man, if there's chili, I'm coming. I don't care.
Nice. Now, in your white chicken chili, do you put crushed up tortilla chips on top?
I don't personally, but I make them available.
Okay.
So one of the secret ingredients, I'll be honest, one of the secret ingredients in my white chicken chili is bacon.
That's a new one I haven't heard. I mean, that's a sure winner. Bacon makes everything fantastic.
Exactly.
My secret ingredient is Penzi's, an adobo spice that is just out of this world.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Nice. Well, it seems silly, but I would love for you to let me know the outcome and how you place and what you ultimately decide to bring.
I will. And you know what? I will take a picture from the day and send it to you.
Fantastic. That's awesome.
I want to say special thanks to my guests today, Keith Stellman and Jackie Jarris. For more info on anyone on the podcast, including the results for Keith's Chili Cook-Off, check out whoweare.fm. There's also a submissions link if you'd like to be considered for the show yourself, whoweare.fm/stories. Also, feel free to say hi to me on Twitter, at Carissa Weiser, or on Facebook and Instagram, at whoweare.fm. In a future episode, we'll be talking to Eric Pitlack, who's actually a colleague of Keith and Jackie, so stay tuned for that. Lastly, one of the best things you can do for the show is to leave a good review on iTunes. Simply go to itunes.whoweare.fm, also linked in the show notes, or directly from the iOS podcast app. This helps other people find the show, so thanks also to everyone who's reviewed so far, including Hunter of Necros, Dog 1234567810er, Shannon in OKC, MP79, Joy Muldoon, and Infinity Spiral. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you on the next look at Who We Are.